I came here to APHA to present this topic and not go to H2R, where a colleague of mine is presenting a paper of mine there this week, because I looked at APHA presentations over the last 2 years or so, and I haven't seen the topic of using probability samples and non-probability samples in health studies here. And my work with the former Knowledge Networks, which was acquired by GFK this year, we've done a lot of studies for federal health agencies and academics where we were doing mixing of probability and non-probability samples. So I wanted to be able to at least present this topic to an APHA audience. I want to thank my co-authors, Curtis Cobb and Alicia Chan, and as opposed to Dave, he had more authors than I had, but I tried to have more words in my title than he had. So we're going to talk about using calibration, weighting, and web-based health surveys. These are online surveys, right? To combine probability and the volunteer samples for use in studying small areas or low prevalence phenomena. So the outline here is I'm going to cover a little bit what's the difference between a probability and a non-probability online panel, and the situations for blending these samples. I'm going to talk specifically about something which is early adopter attitudes, and I'll point that out to you when I get there. The technique that we use for calibrating, and the quantitative evaluation of bias. I'll give 10 examples for you that are all kind of pulled together so you don't have to struggle with individual samples, examples, and then some conclusions on future research. And this originally was a paper presented in, not this topic, but the same topic, not this paper, in 2011, JSM Proceedings, and we hope to have another paper in a peer-reviewed journal this year or next year. So types of web panels. Now, we all know about panels that are taking surveys online. And there's it's how you get onto these panels is the big separation in the world. The former Knowledge Networks Knowledge Panel, is a probability-based panel. And that is, its members are actually recruited with probability samples. So if you're not in the sample, you can't get on the panel. And the samples that we use are either, well, what are probability-based samples? As you might know, area-based in-person methods or random digit dial and landline or with dual frame, as we heard earlier. And I love cell phones. And address-based samples. And I get some great comments about cell phones eventually. And address-based samples is the other one. So panel members then, therefore, have a known selection probability for being on the panel. But due to recruitment costs, current probability-based panels are of modest size. They range from 2,000 to 55,000 in size that I could find. And they're used for prevalence estimates and more rigorous survey research. Now, these non-probability panels, maybe this is what most people are aware of, these are those ones you can join online, where you can volunteer. You see these pop-up invitations to join these panels. The membership consists of people who are basically on the web, and they volunteer or opt in to join, so they're sometimes called opt-in panels. And they learn to get onto this panel through advertisements or email marketing, or there are aggregator sites. You can go to one site and join multiple panels and make money. If you look at the names of some of these, like Paid Survey World or GetPaidSurveys.com, you kind of get the clue what's going on here. They're convenience samples primarily, and they have an unknown selection bias in the sense of people coming on, because there's no real frame per se. They have large memberships that can be in the millions or more, and they're used widely by market research to reach target audiences. Now, the advantage of having millions of people, of course, you can find really rare phenomena in among those large groups of people if you're willing to scan them. But the issue here for us today to remember is one of accuracy. And when we talk about accuracy, I'm going to show you a study that was published in 2011. It was done in 2009 by Yeager and Krosnick. And what they did is they took two probability samples. One was a RDD telephone sample, as rigorous as it could be. And the other one was an internet panel sample, which was the Knowledge Networks panel at the time. And then they took seven opt-in panel samples from these large web panels. And they looked at the absolute average error for 13 demographic and non-demographic characteristics. So they had these external benchmarks. So this is the average of how different they are from, I guess, what you consider the true value. value. And you can see that the probability samples had the lowest difference from those values than the opt-in panels. And so therefore, these are considered to be more accurate. And that's an important first assumption as we move forward, that the probability samples are more accurate. Knowledge Panel, which was started by Knowledge Networks about a dozen years ago, has 55,000 members on it. And this is the panel that I work with. It's a probability-based panel using address-based sampling recruitment. And the recruitment takes place over the year. There's about 8 samples throughout the year. It's ongoing just to handle natural attrition and so on. It's representative of U.S. adults because of the way the panel itself is weighted. And it includes adults with no internet access. Also, and when we encounter households with no internet access, we actually provide them with a laptop computer and free monthly internet access in exchange for their participation on the panel. We have the cell phone population because it's all address-based. We operate in English and Spanish, and then we, of course, like any other panel, we have all this profile data on these individuals that we use for sampling purposes and for attaching that data to studies. The panels, we never really do a study of the whole panel. We take samples from the panel. So not only is the panel a microcosm of the U.S. population that isn't itself a sample, but then we have a way of doing weighted samples from the panel, a smaller size for our clients. So the situations for blending panel samples is why do we want to blend a sample from a nice probability-based sample with a non-probability sample? And I've never really used this joke before, but since I'll tell you why I want to use it today. That one, because David's paper on discrimination, but Will Rogers, if you remember the American humorist, Will Rogers once said that when you mix ice cream and horse manure, it doesn't do much for the horse manure, but it sure does ruin the ice cream. And I was very skeptical at first about taking non-probability samples and mixing it with a really fine probability-based sample. And I have to admit my skepticism has changed a little bit over time. But why would we want to mix them in the first place? Well, one, there's a certain finite size to the probability-based panel. So if I want to look at small or rare populations, the panels just are not large enough to give me sufficient sample size to do what I want to do. So some examples, if you're looking at people who have diabetes or gout patients or other more rare medical conditions, people who view certain kinds of cable network stations or specific race ethnic groups, where it's not so much we don't have enough of them, but your particular study wants a lot of them. And so we hit against the wall in terms of size. Or small geographic areas, such as congressional districts or small media markets, et cetera, or certain zip code clusters. So a panel really has a difficult time meeting the sample sizes to do that. So the solution for us was for this finite probability panel sample size was to supplement this really nice probability sample with opt-in panel cases. So in order to do that, we said, well, if we're going to add opt-in panel cases, first thing we want to do is use quota samples from the opt-in panel so that we don't get huge demographic skews from those cases when they come our way. One time when we didn't do that, we got to look for a study for women smokers in California, and 90% of the sample smokers in California, and 90% of the sample were women. And so big problem there. So that's why we use the quota samples. We then calibrate the combined samples to the probability sample. And we use what I'll mention is ancillary information to minimize the bias introduced from that opt-in panel. So the assumptions is that, important assumption, the probability sample is the most accurate answer. The two samples consist of the same demographic. So I'm getting two like general population samples or two samples of African Americans in the United States. That the ancillary information is able to differentiate a probability-based sample and a non-probability-based sample. And that we're going to wait on this ancillary information to align the combined samples with the probability sample results. So what's the ancillary information? Well, in work that we did in 2000, by colleagues of mine in 2009, that we looked at probability-based samples and non-probability-based samples. And these are the questions that come from early adopter attitudes. It dates back to research back in the 50s. And using cluster analysis, we have 5 basic questions that most likely identify what we call early adopters. I usually try new products before other people do, etc. And you can see that the ANES web panel, which was a very high-quality probability-based panel that we created for the American National Election Survey, and Knowledge Panel, which is the Knowledge Networks panel, these two samples compared to two really, I consider, popular and good quality with double opt-in web panels. And you can see the early adopter proportions in the opt-in panels were proportionally significantly higher than in the probability-based panels. And that's true for all of the questions. So now we had some ancillary information that could be used to distinguish who's from an opt-in panel and who's not on the overall aggregate basis. And we looked at this difference across several demographic characteristics. These first two are the probability-based panels, ANES and Knowledge Panel. These are the two opt-in panels. And you can see that difference between early adopter attitudes went by education, age group, gender. So we had something that we thought we could work with. So, and what is calibration weighting? Just to give you a little background on that, it combines data from different sources and uses estimates from one source as benchmarks to adjust or calibrate the data. So it's a weighting approach, right? It integrates auxiliary information irrespective of the relationship to the other variables. So early adopter attitudes don't have to have anything to do with what you're studying. And, of course, that's real difficult for some of our clients because they have to add extra questions to their survey. It generally results in a reduction of bias. It's efficient for time-limited time frames. This process is not very time-consuming, doesn't involve complex modeling to carry out, so it's a lower analyst burden. And it can be used for any variable interest if these conditions are met. That is, that differential mode effects are avoided. In this instance, we both have web surveys, so that's easy. And that the opt-in sample uses quotas to control for demographic skews, doesn't have a strange impact on the weights. And that we can identify characteristics that differentiate the opt-in panels from the probability source. So what are the steps to do this? One, we take the probability-based sample and we weight that first to look really good to whatever population that we're trying to make it look like. Then we combine the weighted sample with unweighted opt-in sample. And we've tried this several times, whether it's weighted or unweighted, and with the best solution for us has been unweighted opt-in sample. We stack the two together. Then we re-weight them to the benchmarks of the weighted probability sample. In doing that, we then evaluate by comparing the probability sample, this is Knowledge Panel, that's what the KP stands for. We compare the Knowledge Panel only sample to now my new blended product, right? We look at the five early adopter questions, which were in the weighting, of course, and then we took a look at some set of study variables to see, well, what happened here? So here's an example where here are the five early adopter questions, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and for this example, I've just put three study variables, whatever they were. This is real data. And this is the Knowledge Panel sample alone, the probability sample, and this is the blended sample where I stack them and then weight them to look like Knowledge Panel. And this is before we calibrated them. And so the study, you can see that the opt-in panel introduced bias into the sample because we're not getting the same as we would get with the Knowledge Panel sample. But if I calibrate these using early adopter questions, I'm able to, now these are in the weighting, so they are what they are, but what we noticed here is that we can now get the point estimates to approximate the probability sample. There's before and there's after in that one example. I have a more quantitative demonstration to show you, but here's an analysis where we looked at, whoops. Oh, come on, guys, sorry. Apologize for that. We looked at smoking behavior in a Midwest state. We had 611 probability sample cases and 750 opt-in cases. So when we stacked them and blended them, we got 1361. We took 13 items, not just the three you saw on my little example there, from the study questionnaire to examine. What did we look at? We looked at the absolute average error, the same thing Yeager and Krosnick looked at. We looked at the number of items that had 2 percentage points or more greater deviation from the probability-based sample. We looked at the design effect, and then we looked at the average estimated squared bias, which basically takes the variance of the two. This is bias. Set one is the probability-based sample, and this one is the sample that we're working with. And then the average estimated mean square error, which is the bias plus the variance. For that sample that we're talking about. There were four conditions that I'm going to show you, that the weighted probability sample alone, that's our reference benchmark, then I'm going to show you the weighted non-probability opt-in sample alone. So that is, some people buy opt-in sample and they do weight it, okay? So that's using post-stratification weighting. So if you didn't have the probability sample and you just bought opt-in sample, some people would do this, right? And then we blended them together, the two of them, to the benchmarks, but we didn't calibrate it on the early adopter questions. And then finally, we blended them together, but this time we calibrated them on the early adopter questions. And here are the results. For this one smoking study, this is the sample sizes. The absolute average error originally for the weighted opt-in alone was 5.3. The two samples blended but not calibrated is 2.3. The two samples blended and reweighted is 1.3. Okay. I don't have that is the weighted opt-in. Okay. The number of items with 2 percentage points or more out of 13 is 12 out of 13 with greater than 2 percentage points. Blended 7, calibrated 3. The design effect, I just wanted to show you, the design effect is not grossly affected here by the weighting that's taking place. And the estimated average estimated squared bias is a major reduction from 25.57 to 0.064, and the mean square error from 28 down to 1.826. So those are my quantitative estimates with one study. Now, I'm not going to go through each of these, but we did 10 other studies. You can see the sample sizes. The sample size of the probability sample and a non-probability sample. And so these are really large samples. They're all over the map in terms of their content, but they involve patients, healthcare, and telecommunications, and so on. If I just sum those together and take the average absolute error across the 10 surveys, this, using 10 questions each, if I take the opt-in sample unweighted, it was 10.6. If I take the opt-in sample weighted, the absolute average error is 9. The combined samples weighted, 3.4, combined and calibrated, 2.8. The estimated bias from the opt-in alone is 166. Weighted 112, if you weighted it, if you combine the two samples, 12, if you calibrated 7.2, and the mean square error reduction from 170, 116 to 8.9. So it succeeds in minimizing the bias, increasing the sample size, and it's a low analyst burden. It's quick to do. My conclusions that the knowledge panel calibration technique using non-probability samples can deliver larger sample sizes when the preferred probability sample source is limited. Calibrating non-probability samples with probability samples using early adopter questions minimizes the bias in the resulting estimates in the larger combined sample. Process is relatively simple, serves short timelines for rapid turnaround. In future research, we need to identify additional characteristics and attitudes that generally distinguish between the probability, non-probability, or the opt-in panels used for calibration. And we continue to evaluate our calibration approach across survey topics and populations. And we also need to do some continued research to better understand the underlying statistical effects, particularly around the standard error estimates involving that non-probability sample when it's mixed in there. So that's it. This is my contact. It's good until Friday. As of next week, I will be working for Aptus RBI. But I can answer your questions today for GFK. Thanks.